monk, said Ronnie.
I'll just... a little book, said Lutze. He looked around. The cart was passing a funeral parlour. The owner had invested in a large plate glass window, even though the professional undertaker does not, in truth, have that much to sell that looks good in a window, and they usually make do with dark, sombre drapes and perhaps a tasteful urn. And the name of the fifth horseman.
Ha!
Said Lutze quietly.
Something funny, monk.
Obvious when you come to think about it, said Lutze,
as much to himself as to Ronnie.
Then he turned in his seat and stuck out his hand.
Pleased to meet you, he said. Let me guess your name.
And said it. Susan had been unusually inexact. To call Wienrich and Bircher chocolate makers was like calling Leonard of Quirm a decent painter who also tinkered with things, or Death not someone you'd want to meet every day. It was accurate, but it didn't tell the whole story. For one thing, they didn't make, they created. There's an important difference, up to $10 a pound usually. And while their select little shop sold the results, it didn't do anything so crass as to fill the window with them. That would suggest, well, over-eagerness. Generally, W and B had a display of silk and velvet drapes, with, on a small stand, perhaps one of their special pralines, or no more than three of their renowned frosted caramels. There was no price tag. If you had to ask the price of W and B's chocolates, you couldn't afford them. And if you tasted one, and still couldn't afford them, you'd save and scrimp and rob and sell elderly members of your family for just one more of those mouthfuls that fell in love with your tongue and turned your soul to whipped cream. There was a discreet drain in the pavement in case people standing in front of the window drooled too much. Wienrich and Bircher were, naturally, foreigners, and according to Ankh Morpork's Guild of Confectioners, they did not understand the peculiarities of the city's taste buds. Ankh Morpork people, said the guild, were hearty, no-nonsense folk who did not want chocolate that was stuffed with cocoa liquor, and were certainly not effete, lardy-da foreigners who wanted cream in everything. In fact, they actually preferred chocolate made mostly from milk, sugar, suet, hooves, lips, miscellaneous squeezings, rat droppings, plaster, flies, tallow, bits of tree, hair, lint, spiders, and powdered cocoa husks. This meant that according to the food standards of the great chocolate centres in Borogravia and Quirm, Ankh Morpork chocolate was formerly classed as cheese, and only escaped through being the wrong colour, being defined as tile grout. Susan allowed herself one of their cheaper boxes per month, and she could easily stop at the first layer if she wanted to. "You needn't come in," she said as she opened the shop door. Rigid customers lined the counter. "Please call me Miriam. I don't think I—" "Please," said Lady Lejean meekly. "A name is important." Suddenly, in spite of everything, Susan felt a brief pang of sympathy for the creature. "Oh, very well. Miria, you needn't come in."
"I can stand it."
"But I thought chocolate was a raging temptation," said Susan, being firm with herself.
"It is."
They stared up at the shelves behind the counter.
Miria,
said Susan, speaking only some of her thoughts aloud. "From the Euphemian word mirios, meaning innumerable, and le Jean is a crude pun of legion." "Oh, dear."
"We thought that a name should say what a thing is," said her ladyship, "and there is safety in numbers. I'm sorry."
"Well, these are their basic assortments," said Susan, dismissing the shop display with a wave of her hand. "Let's try the back room. Are you all right?"
"I'm fine. I am fine," murmured Lady Lejean, swaying.
"You're not going to pig out on me, are you?"
I know about willpower. The body craves the chocolate, but the mind does not. At least so I tell myself. And it must be true. The mind can overrule the body. Otherwise, what is it for?"